Welcome to episode 191 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on August 14th, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben completely derails Scott from our planned topics by bringing up things such as lawsuits in the technology space, the Microsoft Duo, and the Dataflex rename. Then we wrap up the show by talking about the newly released public preview feature of assigning groups to Azure AD roles. So I have a question for you, Scott. Did you know you can confuse Pear logos and Apple logos?
Well, yes. If you've ever watched a Nickelodeon show, you would know this.
Oh, yeah, my kids aren't. We haven't introduced them to Nickelodeon yet.
No, it would have been like Nickelodeon when you were a kid.
Oh, and you're expecting me to remember that. I didn't have Nickelodeon when I was a kid either. We didn't pay for cable. My parents are Dutch, aka cheap. So we never had cable.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we played outside.
In the way back when, in all Nickelodeon shows, all Apple products would have a Pear logo on them.
Got it. Yeah, I don't remember that. But this is not related to Nickelodeon's Pear. Apple is actually suing a company of 5 employees because their green, obviously Pear logo can get confused with Apple's black Apple logo. I mean, we can throw a link to like the image in the screenshots. They look absolutely nothing alike. And people are furious at Apple, which understandably so. This is a little bit of a ridiculous lawsuit.
Yeah, you got to protect the brands.
Got to protect the fruit. I've actually heard Apple has sued several companies. Whenever somebody comes out with another fruit logo, they just sue them. I think Apple thinks they own all the fruit or something. Who knows? That's my random news for the day.
That is fairly random.
We could talk about lawsuits all day long today because there's another interesting one that hit yesterday that you had mentioned.
That you had mentioned.
Wasn't it yesterday? With Epic. Epic Games is suing Apple because of Fortnite.
Epic is suing everybody. So there's a little bit of a... If you play Fortnite, and lots and lots and lots of people play Fortnite, I'm very bad at Fortnite. I don't play it every day. I'm very bad at it and, you know, generally go in and die quickly and then go, this is not the game for me. But occasionally I come back to it because it's on all the devices and, you know, it's a little bit of a time waster.
Yep.
So if you play Fortnite, you're probably aware of this, but if you don't play Fortnite, Fortnite is a super duper big game, right? It's hugely popular and it's available on all sorts of platforms, on certainly Apple's App Store. It's available in Google Play. It's on PC. It's on Mac. Like if there's a device out there with a screen that can run it, it's basically on it and ready to go. Within Fortnite, like many other games today, it's a free game to play, but you can buy virtual items within it using virtual dollars or V-Bucks. And Fortnite came out with an update where they were giving a 20% discount off of V-Bucks if you bought them through basically Fortnite's payment processing engine or Epic's payment processing engine over your App Store of choice. So normally on both Google and Apple for in-app purchases within games, you pay that 30% overhead to the App Store provider, and they act as the payment processor, and any kind of subscriptions or things would go through them and ultimately not back to kind of the company that was perhaps making the product, like Epic in this case. Well, Epic, like I said, they pushed an update, which they did in a very interesting way. It wasn't actually an update to the app. So it wasn't like you went into your app store of choice and you saw, oh, there's a new version of Fortnite and it comes with these features. They basically shadow pushed it. So it kind of didn't go through the regular review process on either side for Apple or Google. And it presented two prices. It said, hey, here's the price you pay in the App Store, $10, or come and buy your V-Bucks from us at a 20% discount. And they had both buttons in the app. So effectively, you could do an online purchase through their own payment processing engine. You know, they would still take their overhead and kind of do whatever they needed to do there. So long and short of it is that skirts a bunch of rules. Whether those rules are right and wrong is kind of a whole different thing that you know, they're not paying that 30% cut to the app store that is providing that payment processing functionality to them. So Apple removed them very quickly. So if you already have the app on your device, you still have the app on your device. But if you delete the app, or if you are a new user coming in, you cannot delete the app right now. There's kind of like, if you think about like Apple being able to remove things from or kind of control distribution of apps, there's really three levers they could pull here. They could say, okay, I'm not going to do anything and we're going to let Epic continue forward with Fortnite with this model. That probably wasn't going to happen. There's this second method where they can effectively remove it from the App Store and remove it from search. So if somebody new is coming in, they can't download it. And now Epic cannot push any updates to the binaries for that application as well. There also would have been a third option, which is a nuclear option, which would have been revoke Epic's developer certificate and then make Fortnite stop working on everyone's devices. And Apple kind of chose the middle of the road one there. Google also, a couple hours after Apple, went ahead and pulled Epic out of their store as well. So now Epic has, who makes Fortnite, has filed lawsuits against both Apple and Google that they are, by all accounts, not very likely to win at all. You know, they're choosing to take this stand, which, you know, whatever you think of that, the 30% cut and everything else, you know, Epic's got a little bit of money to play with and, you know, they're willing to roll the dice on some lawsuits and things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because Apple's also getting sued in the EU for that same 30% cut policy.
There's arguments to be made there. If you go, I don't know if you've had a chance to read through any of the kind of the briefs around what Epic has going on. But effectively, their argument in the Apple lawsuit, at least, boils down to the App Store is anti-competitive, and they're kind of making the argument that they should be able to have their own App Store on Apple devices, and not just for their game. Like, they don't want to just push their game out. They want to host another app store on Apple devices and make all that stuff work and come through. So obviously, if Epic was able to do that, they would probably stand to make on the order of, you know, billions of dollars if they were large enough and had enough developers pushing apps into their store. But yep, that also requires a bunch of platform support from someone like Apple. Like, I don't think it would be possible today to just make an alternative app store without Apple's blessing. Because how would you get the app store onto your Apple device? You'd either have to download it from Apple's app store to begin with, which then it's subject to all the, you know, sandbox and restrictions and things, yep, that come over there, stuff, or it would have to be preloaded, and that just ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it's all really interesting because it is. It's all geared around the anti-competitive stuff, and I mean, I get that Apple kind of has a monopoly, but if you're going to choose to put it on iOS devices, like if you're going to choose to put something on my website or my platform, you're kind of going to have to adhere to the policies that I have for my platform. And I get you can't do another app store, you can't do an app purchases. Maybe 30% is a big cut, but then just don't put it on there, I guess. I don't know. I kind of see the point.
Yep. There's a line in here where, you know, certainly you can be idealistic and, you know, your feelings about these things can fall one way or the other, right? Does Epic, should they be paying this 30% cut? Does Apple or Google deserve 30%? Is 15% a better number? Is 0% a better number? Like what is that? And right, what does that look like? But ultimately, like as presented and with what's going on by most analyses I've seen, anti-competitive in this case does not equal illegal. It's not monopolistic or kind of anything else, which some of the EU stuff with Apple and some of the recent, you know, Senate inquiries and committee hearings and things they've had here in the US have been more along the kind of anti-monopoly train.
Yeah. Who knows? It'll be interesting to watch.
Well, I mean, like most things, this will probably be over in like 2 weeks. And
reach kind of settlement.
Yep.
Epic will realize they're losing millions of dollars because their app isn't in the store. And
last time this happened, because this has gone through kind of in the past in a similar motion where Epic pulled itself out of Google Play and opted to just do sideloading or distribution through alternative app stores on Android. So like Samsung's app store or things like that. And ultimately, like within like a couple of weeks, they came right back into the Google Fold and the Google Store.
Yeah, which is interesting. So if they've tried it on Google and it didn't work, why do they want to try to do it again on Apple?
You always want to try and do it, right? Like that. That yeah. is a capitalistic behavior to want to earn a better share of revenue and not have to pay a cut to somebody else. So it's not about not wanting to try it. You always want to try it. It's about timing when you try it. So there's this confluence of things going on in Europe, and particularly those committee hearings that happened in the US. Because one of the most interesting things to come out of those committee hearings wasn't necessarily the testimony of Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg and Sundar Pichai. The most interesting thing to come out of those committee hearings was probably all the evidentiary things. So all the emails and PowerPoint presentations and things that the House committees released. And now you've had folks like Epic going through and saying like, ooh, there might be some tidbits in here that in some certain lenses or, you know, with the right judge could be construed to go this way.
And they figure it's worth the money to try.
Why not try? Yeah. I mean, Epic's hugely successful and they can sit probably for a couple weeks and ride it out.
Right. Well, because like you said, they're probably still getting money in from everybody that's already playing it and on other platforms and has it installed. They're just not going to get their influx of new users is probably going to slow down some.
Yeah, we'll see where it all goes. It's certainly part of that moment too. So to kind of make it not just an Epic thing, there's also this current and kind of change going on right now where there's a decent pushback against App Store policies, particularly from Apple, around things like gaming services. So Microsoft they have their Project X Cloud service, effectively being able to stream games from the cloud.
Yes,
and, you know, very similar to Stadia from Google and things like that, at least to like an operating principle. So Apple per current App Store guidelines and the rules that they abide by for, you know, developers to build against, you can't release an alternative thing like xCloud or Stadia on the App Store. So Apple's really kind of like standing out there as a loner kind of with that policy, which is why you see Microsoft and Google both pushing so heavily, like Google obviously for Android, right? They make it, but even Microsoft kind of pitching in and, you know, you want the best experience for xCloud, come over to Android.
Yes. Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, sperrysoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. Speaking of Android and Microsoft, I forgot this news. Well, should we pivot into Microsoft-related stuff now? Well, non-gaming-related stuff?
Sure.
Microsoft has a new device out there, Scott. The Microsoft Duo.
They do.
It was announced over a year ago now. I remember when they made the announcement and everybody was like, it's crazy that they're pre-announcing it this far in advance. And I think there were a bunch of leaks and they kind of had to. And it finally became available for pre-order a day or two ago. And I went and looked at it and I said, nope, not going to pre-order that. It's interesting. It's an Android device. It is, and we'll put links to it so you can go look at it. It's foldable. So it's it's kind of like, was it the Galaxy Fold? Where you have two different screens, you can fold them, collapse them together. It's two 5.8-inch screens, and when it's fully unfolded, it can act as a single 8.3-inch screen, I believe, or the multiple 5-inch screens. So realistically, when it's folded up, it's about the size of an iPhone. When it's unfolded, it's sort of roughly the size of an iPad mini. And it is a phone. So it's available on all your major, at least US carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. The price is what got me on this one. So they have a 128 gigabyte model and a 256 gigabyte model for, it's like $1,400 and $1,500 respectively, which is more than iPhones and iPads and frankly, a lot of laptops. So I don't know. I don't know what the market is. I'm guessing they're shooting for execs that want something bigger but still want a phone that they can put in their pocket. I can tell you their market is not me.
So certainly it's an Android device. There is that out there. Compared to other foldables that have come out for over the last year, it is not like other foldables that are out there. So specifically in context to like screen and folding. So if you think about like maybe like the Samsung Galaxy Fold or even some of the smaller phone devices like the Z Flip, Motorola Razr, things like that, they are continuous screens. And in this case, it is two separate screens. So that does mean that you have bezels in between them. So when you say like open it up and it's the size of an iPad mini, yes, but it's got the kind of bezel going down the center of it. So you'll never have you wouldn't pull up like a YouTube video or a movie or something like that across both screens at the same time in a kind of like full screen. What Microsoft has done is they've got kind of a custom launcher and running through on this device where they've got a design paradigm where they talk about things like, if you watch the press briefing, they go through it quite a bit. You know, when you take some apps, you should be able to like snap them side to side. Or if you take an app and you go and snap it to like both screens at once, say you take like Outlook as an app and you snap it, well, I should have the pane of my folders over on the left-hand side and over on the right-hand side, I should have the reading pane now. Or if I snap it to just one side, I should have the pane of folders and then, you know, I would select or touch and drill into that next level and then have a breadcrumb to go ahead and get me out back to the top. It's interesting from maybe like a phone multitasking perspective. It'll probably be a little bit more solid. Like it looks to just be more solid, being that it's, you know, metal chassis and everything, than potentially something like a Galaxy Fold. But who knows until it comes out and lands in people's hands. As you said, the price is high. I don't know who's out there and saying, I'm going to spend $1,400 on the 128 gig and not just boot in the extra $100 and get the 256. Like, yeah, it does take you up to 1,500.
If you're spending that much money already, what's an extra $100 to have double the storage?
I would just say that like when you say that's expensive and out of line with current pricing, it's not at all for what people are releasing today. Like Samsung had their Unpacked event last week, and some of the new Hero devices from Samsung are made out of plastic and they cost upwards of $1,000. Like that's just, it's where phones are at, and like that's where flip devices are at. Like if you were going to go buy a clamshell phone, like a Samsung Galaxy Z Flip, that's a $1,500 device. So would you rather have one that's more business oriented or consumer oriented? That's a little bit of, you know, a rationalization point that you as a consumer have to make. I would also like, the thing that stuck out to me about the Duo was, yes, they announced it a year ago. Over the course of that year, you know, there wasn't like a hardline spec for what was going to be in it for processor, RAM, screen resolution, all those kinds of things. Now that it's out and it's released and it's running in manufacturing and you can pre-order it and, you know, theoretically have it in your hands on September 10th, it's to a certain degree last year's specs for this year's prices. And that's kind of a tough pill to swallow, especially if you're in like that high-end Android device where specs matter, right? Like you know, certain consumers may buy based on refresh rate on a screen and the amount of RAM on that device, the ability to maybe have removable storage, you know, whatever it happens to be. And certainly processor as well is a big driving factor there.
I'm really curious to see once people get their hands on it and how long it goes out there. And it's, yeah, from the price, it's just not devices I tend to look at. I think I compare it to the iPhone.
I think it's like lots of things, right? You could go back and you could say, was the Trio for you?
Right.
Was the Blackjack for you, right? Like what was that like business oriented, or was a Blackberry for you? I never thought I was going to be a person who would like Blackberries until I had a corporate job where my business phone that I was provided by my employer was a Blackberry. And I loved that thing, right? Like that was a great little awesome device. And it got me into some of more of those corporate oriented devices. Like I bought a Trio just to buy a Trio and try it out because I was enamored, you know, with having a stylus on the thing and being able to write and jot notes and things like that. So it might find a niche. Is it going to be like the thing that crushes Samsung Galaxy Notes or gets rid of iPads? No, probably not.
I probably see its play probably more in that executive space. Because look at the number of executives that do 90% of their work from their phone, because frankly, they're never actually at their desk or at a computer, because they're running from meeting to meeting to meeting. This gives you the ability to quickly throw it in your pocket and have a little bit more real estate for, like you said, going through out emails, or I think some of the marketing videos even had Teams calls where you can have the video on one screen and you can kind of have it, hold it sideways, flip it up in a laptop clamshell-like look, and still have your video, and then have some meeting notes or something on the bottom screen. So that would be my guess is where they're targeting as executives, not necessarily your consumer device market. That's what I see. I don't know. We'll see once it comes out.
I would encourage you, like if you're into technology, whether you think you're like going to be into this device or not, Microsoft published their press briefing. It's out on YouTube. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's 30, 35 minutes. You know, skip the first 5 minutes and kind of the rah-rah. Maybe start a little bit in, understand, and take a look at where they're going with kind of that UI paradigm for some of those things on there, because that's always interesting to kind of see where companies are going in that lens. And they have a really cool kind of hardware segment at the end about how they design the hinge and some of the internals. And if you're into kind of the machinations of how these things come together from an industrial design perspective, that's all pretty cool to see as well.
Nifty. Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Other Microsoft news. Scott, we were wrong a week or two ago, or the last 2 weeks, when we talked about DataFlex and DataFlex Pro.
Well, I was not wrong.
I was wrong.
We were not wrong. Potentially, somebody at Microsoft was wrong.
So, DataFlex is no more. DataFlex has died and been resurrected as Project Oakdale. Shortest name ever, except not really, because I think Project Cortex technically had a shorter name than Project Oakdale. Because I think Project Cortex's official name only slipped out once or twice, but it was announced publicly as Project Cortex. This one at least had DataFlex for like a week before they got sued over trademarks and it had to go to Project Oakdale. Yeah, interesting. So if you have listened to our previous episodes and you're going to show notes or links that had DataFlex in the URL or you're searching for DataFlex, those are all broken. Microsoft didn't even redirect the DataFlex URLs. They just renamed them all to Project Oakdale URLs. So all of those give 404s. Go search for Project Oakdale or replace certain words in the URL with Project Oakdale instead of Dataflex or Dataflex Pro. And you can go find all the blog posts and all the information about what was formerly known as Dataflex Pro.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. There was a post on the Power Apps blog on August 11th where, you know, at that point it was kind of post Dataflex to Oakdale kerfuffle. And it walks through kind of some of those, and all the links are updated in there because it's officially on the Oakdale train.
Yep. And the product is still coming. You're still going to get, it sounds like nothing has changed. You'll still get your pro version. CDS is going to end up being something. You'll have the free version that works with Teams. They just have to go back and find a name that they aren't going to get sued about.
The joy of naming products.
Yes. That is always fun. Anything else you want to talk about? With that was kind of anticlimactic, wasn't it?
There's always more to talk about outside of like all the lawsuits and things like that are happening.
Yeah, this was like the lawsuit episode.
Yeah. Thanks for turning it into that. I would take a look just to kind of at least bring in one interesting thing that's out there to kind of look at this week. If you're playing in M365 kind of Azure land, is Microsoft is in preview releasing the capability to assign groups to Azure AD roles. So this is currently available for Azure AD groups, so specifically cloud groups, and only for Azure AD built-in roles, not for custom roles. So if you have an on-premises security group and you're performing directory synchronization, you cannot assign that security group to an Azure AD role, nor can you create a custom role and then assign that to a group. But if you've got built-in roles like, you know, help desk administrators, like user password admins.
I mean, even your global admin, right? Global admin, SharePoint admin.
Yep, those all apply, which is like, man, this has been a long time coming to have some of this stuff ready to go. But it should greatly simplify that landscape of kind of principle to elevation management, and maybe simplify workloads through things like privileged identity management. Or if you don't have access to PIM because it's all in Azure AD P2, then here's a way to go ahead and make that happen. It is a gated feature right now. So it is gated to Azure AD Premium P1 licensing. So you do have an entitlement requirement in there to make that happen and kind of set it up. But it's certainly, if you have Azure AD P1 and you manage things like this today, because if you have P1, you don't have P2, so you don't have PIM, and you're managing these things as kind of like one-offs and you'd like to have a better way to do it, I would go take a look at this one and follow it closely.
Yes. Like I said, it's in preview. I have nothing official on this. I feel like this is one that would like stick in P1 for preview just to limit everybody from trying it. And then maybe once it hits GA, I could see this kind of being downgraded to everybody having it. Because they did that with, was it group-based licensing or dynamic groups? There was another group-related feature that started as a premium license and then later rolled into everybody kind of once it hit GA.
Yeah, you've seen things like that with group-based licensing. And, you know, again, this is preview, so there's potentially limitations there. And you might go like, oh, I really need it to do X, Y, or Z, and it doesn't do that. Well, it's a preview. Give your feedback, right? And roll in that program and make that happen. Like one thing that I could see being super beneficial would be having Azure AD role assignments be applicable to not only custom groups or Azure AD cloud groups, but specifically things that can only be in the cloud, like cloud dynamic groups. But unfortunately, these are only available to user assigned groups right now.
And one thing they don't say, and I see a question in here, and it's related to it, is how this would work if you have nested AD groups too. Like if you assign it at the top level group, will it trickle down to all the nested AD groups, or how will that work? So things to go play with and test out while it's in preview.
Well, because it's gated to, and it only works with Azure AD groups today and not with a synchronized group from on-premises, there's no concept of nesting in those anyway.
Why was I thinking you could do nested security groups in Azure AD?
Unless they added something at some point and I totally missed it.
Maybe not. Or I just haven't paid that close attention, and most of mine are all synced.
That could be it. And I don't know what that'll look like, you know, when that rolls up. And, you know, it might be something that's always gated to custom cloud groups. And quite frankly, like, that might be okay, because it's still giving you a capability that you didn't have before.
Exactly. Very cool. That is a nice new feature. I'm glad we stuck some news in at the end. Although technically some of those other lawsuit ones towards the end were fun news too.
We got to work on your definition of fun, but...
My definition of fun is being a nerd. I have no definition of fun. No, I don't know. I'm going to quit. I'm just going to stop talking. I think it's... I'm still on vacation. I've struggled this week coming back from being... I mean, kind of on vacation for 3 weeks. I worked a little bit, but kind of getting back into the swing of it and getting motivated to dive into stuff has been a challenge the last week.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. It's starting to drag on a little bit, you know, vacation or no vacation.
Yes, I would say that is probably part of it too, is the whole, we can say the word, the whole COVID thing just never seeming to end.
Someday it will end.
So with that, go enjoy the rest of your Friday, Scott. Work hard.
Well, it's Friday. I'm going to try not to work hard.
Okay, don't work hard. Enjoy the rest of your Friday and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.